Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the voice of the American Readout. This is Radio Free Readout, episode 1635. This is flying. We are already in September. Amazing. Amazing. Being on this journey with all of you guys, I want to thank you for being out there and for tuning in. I hope you're having a great, safe Labor Day weekend and spending time with friends and family and people that count. You take this time off. So we've got something special that I'm going to be going over, in which I had intended to cover last week. What to do when the agents come knocking on your door. They want to ask questions and you want to do the right thing as a citizen, of course, keeping the Constitution in mind. And we are going to talk about this tonight because this is something that folks are being confronted with and they're asking, what should I do? What should have I done? What should I tell other people to do if they find themselves in this situation? So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. But first of all, we are going to get the news and commentary knocked out. News and commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse, the social and economic collapse, and the rebuilding. There's always a rebuilding, right? All 10 books are out, including audio. Check those out at 299days.com. This is going to be a short news and commentary section. Just a few stories that I want to touch on because I want to make sure we've got plenty of room for the main topic for tonight's show. In international news, Venezuela, out of Caracas, Venezuela named publicly 18 military commanders to oversee the production and distribution of food and basic goods in an effort to alleviate severe shortages affecting the country. Well, their policies are what's leading to shortages, and of course, this is just straight up sheer communism. The military now is going to be in charge of producing and distributing food. Look, when food is being used as a weapon, well, obviously, who better to put into the hands of than the military? I mean, that's who you entrust with weapons, right? And food's being used as a weapon. So it just makes sense, especially in a communist regime, that it would be the military to be in charge of that. You control the food, you control the people, and they're trying to control the people. Out of the New York Times, interesting story. There is an organization, a company out of Israel. Now, when I select a VPN node, I never select Israel. Those VPN servers there are, well, they're probably government ran. They're probably Mossad. But anyway, the question here is, want to visibly spy on 10 iPhone owners without their knowledge, gather their every keystroke, sound, message, and location? That will cost you $650,000, plus a $500,000 setup fee with an Israeli outfit called the NSO Group, as in November Sierra Oscar. The NSO Group, you can spy on more people if you'd like. Just check out the company's price list. That's out of the New York Times. I'm not even sure that's legal. Something tells me it isn't. But New York Times is covering that. In national news, actually, this is regional. This would be affecting the American Redoubt. There's this leftist anti-police, wild, screaming Marxist professor that was ousted back in February for her radical behavior from the Missouri State University. She's been hired and by a prominent college in the American Redoubt. It is Gonzaga, Gonzaga University, Gonzaga Prep, Gonzaga University in Spokane. Fox News saying that the fired Mizzou professor, Melissa Click, was hired at Gonzaga University. As the listener who sent this in wrote, just what we need, another radical commie to help indoctrinate the youth of the Redoubt. Disgusting. Yes, I agree. Well, this is what I've been saying. You know, this, the American Redoubt is one of a very few, and it's probably the most prominent now, conservative strongholds, bastions of God-fearing, liberty-minded patriots who hold to traditional American ideals that the founding fathers espoused, that our grandparents espoused and bargained for when they came to the United States. The traditional American ideals and the Constitution and all of Americana. So they don't like it. I was talking about this with a family member, that they don't like it that you don't want to accept their leftist agenda, an amoral agenda, anti-constitutional, globalist, right? So if you don't like that, then don't live in Berkeley. That's the culture that's there, and that's just what you have to expect. Or don't move to Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, Washington, the Chicago area, wherever, Southern California. Then you just simply move, and you, and with the understanding that, that that's the way that culture is there. And so I'm going to move to another culture that largely reflects my values. But when you do that, you're saying you're rejecting their leftist agenda, which infuriates them. So what do? They go after those conservative rural areas, not just rural, but conservative areas. And that's where they're trying to get Muslims relocated to. That's where they will try to infiltrate the universities and colleges and hire whacked out communist professors. I mean, the scraping the barrel there at the bottom to pull in that type of indoctrinator into these conservative strongholds. Gonzaga, who would have thought? All right, we'll be back in a minute with a little bit about this month's September National Preparedness Month. In September, we'll talk about that. A couple of things that I wanted to wrap up from last week, I'll tie a little bow on that, and then we'll get into the main topic here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Don't go away.
First, Walmart closes stores, and now they're laying off close to 7,000 workers. 94 million people out of work, and the president is pushing the TPP like it's going out of style. Top that off with a major collapse of a cargo shipper and a bank not delivering gold, and you have a recipe for financial disaster. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here, and I am bringing you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt. Coffee. It's the lifeblood of the Northwest, and to Redoubters, it's as valuable as sound currency. So why would you trust your Morning Joe to anything besides something out of a can? You need coffee from SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. It's the only supply, the highest quality roasted or unroasted beans for your coffee drinking pleasure or for your food storage. So just like stacking silver, get yourself some today. That's SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. And just like my friend Whiskey62 says, Sisters Coffee Roasters coffee, it's what all the cool patriots are drinking. That's SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Okay, welcome back. Major news this week as international shipping giant Hanjin collapsed and filed for bankruptcy, resulting in their ships being seized by local governments all over the world. It has virtually caused a derailment and forfeiture of merchandise and durable goods all over the planet. Several other shipping companies have stepped up to take cargo at expedited fees, keeping the Baltic Dry Index from collapsing due to their always staggering prices. Now, the effect of Hanjin's collapse is going to be felt far and wide as retailers all over the planet are scrabbling to cover their shelves in preparation for the upcoming holiday season. Now, this is in conjunction with their major announcement that major media outlets are giving this story now the attention that it deserves. According to the Wall Street Journal, freight brokers in Asia said about 540,000 containers are expected to face delivery of delays. Wow, folks, this is such a big story. There's so much to get in on this one. That the delay of the delivery said they could keep it range from a few days to more than a month. Now, that's going to cause major impacts to retailers like Target, Shopko, and of course Walmart, at that matter. Now, meanwhile, we saw from yesterday and today before and the day before, that'd be Thursday and Friday, shipping rates have soared as freight capacity shrank overnight. And now the shipping rates now, these are rates that are established worldwide in Busan, South Korea, and Los Angeles, rose almost by $2,300 a container. And then that was on Thursday. Now they were $1,700 a container at the beginning of the week. So folks, if you're listening to this and doing the math on it, it really is one of those things you got to look at. What's the price of cargo to actually ship, and how's that going to get passed along? Now, meanwhile, the reason we've seen is that Hengjin, retailers are going to use this as a scapegoat. Now, one of the biggest things is that Walmart, JCPenney, Target, and other clothing retailers are going to use this to bump the prices up when their margins are already what they are. Now, the biggest hit may come in the form of a $25 billion U.S. toy industry, which has been sweating the Hengjin news as it prepares for the holiday season. Now, $25 billion, if you think about that in terms of holiday season, that could make or break someone's season. Now, Jeff Bergman, the managing director of the Toy Shippers Association, said that customers are fortunate that only about 20 containers are on Hengjin-affiliated vessels at this moment, but that doesn't mean that more will be associated later on this holiday season if they can't get their ships out of port. The ripple effect is going to be tremendous, is what he said on this. Now, folks, I know the story may seem not necessarily impactful to us, but if you think about what's going to happen when shipping stops, when trucks stop rolling, when durable goods stop hitting the markets, things start going up in price, and they start going up in price right away. It's something to think about. Now, there are other companies out there, Mitsubishi Freight, and there are other smaller affiliates, but one of the biggest things is that right now, when you think about what's going to happen in terms of the marketplace, you've got to understand that as they get into the holiday season, it's fairly significant. So keep an eye on this story, folks, and we'll have more prep from ready for you as developments come up. In other world news tonight, Deutsche Bank continues to show some very signs of collapse, and now they're even longer in delivering physical gold that they should have in their vaults. Xterra Gold, if you haven't heard of them, is a German exchange-traded company commodity fund who houses their bank within Deutsche Bank's vaults. They tried to get access to their gold early last week and had been promised under the Xterra Gold prospectus. Now, when those gold wasn't delivered, it led to much confusion about where the failure had taken place. Then, later on Wednesday, a very odd response came from the Deutsche Börse company where the ETC is traded, which they were trying to sound like they passed the buck. This is what was said according from that company. Deutsche Börse Commodities stresses that the owners of Xterra gold units can exercise their right to delivered securitized gold at any time. The gold is delivered by the bank branch on which the investor houses its securities on the condition that if the bank offers this service, as the gold can be delivered only through the bank's and investors' custodian bank. Now, kind of a funny statement there, but really what that means is that they're saying, hey, there's nothing wrong here. You can get your gold at any time, only if the bank offers that particular type of delivery or service. Well, Deutsche Bank does. However, Deutsche Bank does fulfill the obligations specified in the Xterra Gold prospectus, as a matter of course, but unfortunately, Deutsche Bank wasn't delivering the gold. So there's quite a bit of confusion about what's going on within that gold in those vaults. Now, folks, here's my take on this entire particular event. Deutsche Bank, we've known for a long time, is very underwater as far as where they're at and their finances. We know that last month they had some real problem with their trade derivatives. Nothing has collapsed just yet. But when a bank actually doesn't turn over any physical gold that it might have in its vault, it's a major indication that there's serious financial trouble on the horizon. Now, yes, it may be Europe, but Europe does pave the way for what happens over here in America. So we need to really keep an eye on banks that maybe offer that type of gold fund. And it's just, again, my reasoning to you. If you don't own that gold, that silver, that lead, that land, it's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. And that's a major problem, folks. If it doesn't belong to you, it's not yours. That's why you have to have those things in your vaults buried in a coffee can, somewhere like that. So, again, folks, thanks for listening. And this week, thanks for putting up with my patience on kind of being disjointed, but it's been a busy week for Fox 519. Thank you again, and God bless. And again, for Radio Free Readout and all of you out there listening, this is Fox 519 signing off. God bless, and have a great day.
This is segment two at Radio Free Readout. And segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, the great patriots there who are helping to get God-fearing patriots strategically relocated into the northernmost part of the panhandle of North Idaho. If you've got your eyes set on the Bonner's Ferry area, Boundary County, and even parts of Bonner County, they will help you with that. Give them a call today. Or check them out at SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. They've got all their contact information there. September is National Preparedness Month, according to FEMA. Well, if you remember last week, I covered this article, which basically she just took the words right out of my mouth on several things. And plus, I added some other things about the government warning people, in fact, telling them they must get a permit if they're going to go and rescue people. Do you have to have a permit if you're going to begin rebuilding on your home that was destroyed by the flood? You have to halt your project until you get a building permit in the middle of a disaster. So there's a great chasm here that's used to be filled with common sense. Now it's just a gaping hole in our culture. Anyway, this came at a time when Germany and the Czech Republic are telling their citizens, prepare for the worst, store up on food, water, be prepared to be self-reliant, be prepared for there not to be government services. You plan on being on your own. Well, not in America. You should have your little 72-hour kit, but other than that, don't do anything too drastic that should be left to the government, the professionals. You don't know what you're doing. You're just going to get someone hurt. And in all of this, we expose where the Red Cross now, in several cases, they sent a police officer in uniform, just got off work, went down to the Red Cross shelter with his Bible in hand to go and pray with the survivors and the disaster flood victims. I just want to pray with you. I want to bring some comfort to you. I want to let you know that somebody cares. Mind if I pray with you? Oh, we got a little complaint here. We can't have that. No religiosity being spread around here. You're going to have to leave. And then they go into this is a pastor complaining. The church opened its building up, partnering with the government, right? This is part of the clergy response team. We're going to partner with you because the churches see this as an opportunity to minister to their communities. So they're going to reach out. They're going to be part of, they want to be on the Rolodex to be called to rise to the occasion when there's a disaster. Well, they get called. All right. We need your church. Okay, great. Set up your Red Cross shelter. But you and your staff are going to have to go. We can't have any religiosity around here shoving your views on these poor disaster victims. No, there's no proselytizing, no praying. Matter of fact, we got to do something about these Bibles or some little room, a closet we can hide them in. That's not what they really said. I'm just throwing that part in. But I mean, this is what we've been reduced to. And this is what happens when you compromise, you partner with a system that's in rebellion to God. You're going to try to chum up with them like your buddies and partner with them. We got to realize there's an adversarial relationship that we did not create. We're going to have to deal with it. We're going to have to confront it. We are going to have to decide what type of country we want America to be, because they're defining it and we're letting them. So right at that moment, that pastor, in my opinion, should have said, okay, pack up your stuff Everybody, if you got a Red Cross vest, get off these grounds. Get off this property right now. We will continue to maintain this shelter, and we're going to call every one of our parishioners. We're going to have them bring in cots, bedding, sleeping bags, clothes, whatever they got. We're going to cook these people a hot meal, and the Red Cross isn't going to have anything to do with it, which is the way it should be, because the church has abrogated its duties and allowed the government to fill a role that the church should have been filling all along anyway. So that's my take on that. But alternatives. Todd Starnes had an article here where he listed several disaster relief organizations that the Red Cross is not the only ones out there. In fact, they are the ones who are tied to the federal government in massive funding, according to the reports that I've received. I've not independently researched this, but it just seems very credible. But I do know that the testimonies that are coming out from people is consistent with what we hear about people that are serving the government. Separation of church and state, can't have anything accepting federal funds to be tied to anything with, you know, especially Christianity. I would venture to say that if a Muslim cleric was walking around asking to pray with people, something tells me, my little gut, that they would not have been asked to leave and told that they couldn't do that. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. No, actually, the Red Cross has, we don't want pastors, we don't want people talking about Jesus, we don't want people praying, Bibles, all that stuff, because the Red Cross has spiritual advisors. And, you know, it's somebody that can minister to all faiths, usually a woman, some spiritual advisor woman that can go around and minister to all faiths. And this one person said she was creepy. Well, yeah, I can imagine. That's the only thing authorized by the spiritual advisor. Hide Christ under a bushel. No, I'm going to let it shine. There's some alternatives who are helping in disasters. Todd Starnes put out a list, and I concur with his list. Samaritan's Purse president, Franklin Graham, said these families need help in response to the disaster, the floods. He said, we want to remind them that they are not alone and show them God's love as we help them recovery. And not just to show them God's love, but to share the gospel with them. That's the key right there. Here are the links to the ministries that he endorses and supports, and I concur with this list. Of course, Samaritan's Purse. They do an amazing job helping all over the world in disaster response. They don't compromise on their values, and they don't censor themselves either, from what I've seen. The Family Research Council. We're going to put these links up in our highlights and resources. Might just put in a whole separate posting just for this. Links, other than alternatives to the Red Cross. Southern Baptist Convention Disaster Relief. They've got it going on also. They've got a huge disaster preparedness network, from what I understand. And then there's another one, too, very interesting, especially across the South. Operation Barbecue Relief, BBQ Relief. Operation BBQ Relief. This one I had not heard of. I'm going to research this one a little further, but I trust Todd Starnes' judgment on his assessment on these other organizations and his response to the government's mishandling of yet another disaster response. So he's got credibility with me. I'm going to leave Operation Barbecue Relief, BBQ Relief, on the list until I find out otherwise. How's that? But this week, this month, we do have FEMA saying this is National Preparedness Month. Just don't get too self-reliant now. Remember, you still need the government. But until the government arrives in, you know, like 24 hours, you need to be able to not worry about having to go to the store. So as the tradition, each week of National Preparedness Month has a designed theme. Each week, this week, September, August 28th through September 3rd, promote National Preparedness Month. Well, I've done my part. I did my civic duty. Week two, what's on the agenda? Well, September 4th through the 10th, preparing family and friends, which everyone in this listening audience should already be doing. Week three, preparing through service, you know, reaching out to your neighbors. Although we got some mixed messaging here. because after the flooding and Cascadia Rising as well, that training exercise and real world deployments, strong messaging coming from the government. Do not self-deploy. You do not self-deploy. You have to report to this checkpoint. We want your name, rank, date of birth, license plate, note from your mother. Make sure you got a safety helmet, steel-toed boots, and a reflective vest. And then you'll wait for an assignment. You do not self-deploy. Nobody self-deploys. Well, except for the Cajun Navy. They were rescuing people and doing things that the government couldn't. It was in their backyard. They knew their neighbors. They knew their community. They knew their way around. These guys went into action to get done what needed to be done. And they wanted to stop. In fact, they deployed police, law enforcement resources for what? To help people? Well, not directly, but of course, indirectly, we're going to help people by intercepting the Cajun Navy. That's fishermen and commercial boaters and even private boaters from going out and rescuing people. We're going to be patrolling and looking for those guys who are self-deploying. The audacity to self-deploy and help people without permission. Preparing through service, as long as you got your permit, which they don't have a system for, but they make it up. Well, they take 2 days to make up some little permitting system for you to rescue people. You got to sit around with sucking on your thumb, waiting for the federal government once again to come through and respond. Amazing. So week four, individual preparedness. That should actually be number one. Individual preparedness should be the number one thing on the list. Look, you're on an airplane, right? What do they tell you? If the oxygen masks fall down, put yours on first. Make sure that you are taken care of, and then you can help others. So, individual preparedness. I'm moving this back up to the top of the list. And then in week five, lead up to National Preparathon Day. Well, I say develop something with your own friends and family and be independent. So that's what's there. We've got, a couple of events I want to tell you guys about. The Benton and Franklin Local Emergency Management Association is putting on a preparedness workshop seminar expo in Central Washington on the 24th, September, Saturday, 24th, from 9 to 5 at the Island View Worship Center in Richland, Washington. I will be there speaking about AMRON and disaster communications, not specifically ham radio. There's some other guy that's going to be putting on a ham radio class. I will be talking about communications, emergency communications in general, and AMRON. So we'll link that also. There's going to be covered food storage, water and sanitation, ham radio, colloidal silver, things like that. So we have that to look forward to. And finally, before we take our break, I was sent received an email that I wanted to pass on to you guys to see if you have any input. Ladies, listen up. Hello, JJS. I was curious. Do you know or have you heard of any women that are ministering to other women within the church in regards to preparing, politics, patriot matters, etc.? I have many Christian sisters that are completely apathetic to all of these issues. I find that it is hard to even discuss these matters with many Christian women. This is a Christian woman writing. So, I find it hard to even discuss these matters with many Christian women, many men also, and would love some firsthand advice on someone that has gone before and is doing it effectively. Advice on presentation, topics, ideas, etc. would be great. As I'm sure you've encountered yourself, I get responses ranging from blank stares to comments such as, "Isn't that just being fearful?" Yeah, and my response is, "Isn't that just being used as a scapegoat? Isn't that just your excuse? Oh, we're not supposed to be fearful, so I'm not going to do anything to prepare." Even though Proverbs says those who see danger coming will take refuge and the foolish will keep going on and suffer. or look at the ant, you sluggard. It doesn't even have a commander to tell it to prepare for the winter because it knows winter's coming, hardship's coming, to store up for it. So you can make it through and survive through the other side. They don't do it out of fear. They do it because it's what you're supposed to do. So, and now when you got somebody telling you to do it, then you got it. But maybe that's the whole thing right there. People, they don't want to have a commander, somebody telling them to prepare. Or if you don't tell them, they're not going to do it anyway. So I don't know. Okay, back to the question. I can tell you, right, the first person that pops into my head would be Enola Gay over at the Patrius Familia blog. Great lady, great friend. They're friends of the family. Their family is friends of our family. They're just super, super neat people. And she has addressed this from home living to self-reliance to government issues and our cultural issues and raising children, homeschooling and being self-reliant and all of these things. And you talk about a godly woman putting things into perspective. Enola Gay, code name, one each, over at Paratus Familia blog. Paratus, you know, the prepared family. Latin for the prepared family. Paratus Familia. And I'll continue on. I even have friends that will publicly mock their husbands if he is preparedness minded. Well, shame on those women then. And, you know, men, make better choices when you select your women for wives. Many women I know believe that politics should not be discussed from the pulpit, period. Biting my tongue. Let alone having full-on discussions in the church. Even my own women friends in the church that seem to get it are not really being proactive about it. That's a virus that's actually affects many people far and wide. There's a whole lot of give me the milk, but not the meat because I won't stomach that. I don't want to be, don't scare me. So one thing that I shared with some women friends recently was that was positively received was the story that Fox 519 shared that came out of Venezuela that following the mom and the wife that was documenting her 30-day hunt for food. I find that if you can pull on a mom's heartstrings in regard to her children, she's likely to listen more. Of course, I wish my brothers and sisters in Christ both would have an ear for these things, but right now I have a heart especially for my sisters in Christ. Any resources you may have would be greatly appreciated. Oh, and by the way, I think this would make a great topic for a radio program. Thanks and God bless to you and yours. Now, I agree, this would make a great topic, but it's not just women that are affected by this. There are men who say the very same things. These are the kind of people that are trying to sidestep duty and responsibility. They're not using discernment to discern the times that we're in. They're not using wisdom. So, and here's the other thing, too, you got to remember. We're dealing with a remnant because, by and large, this is not the only thing that people are rejecting. They're rejecting sound doctrine all across the board. So those who do adopt sound doctrine, including being self-reliant and reading, understanding, discerning the times that we're in and understanding the necessity to, you know, with haste to prepare for that hardship, not out of fear, but as a sense of duty and responsibility and with an eye on the rebuilding afterward so they can be effectively involved in a part of that, you're dealing with a remnant. What's left over of what used to be? The whole cloth, which is all moldy now, there's only a remnant that is still solid. And that's who we're dealing with. So not everybody's going to listen. Just like the stuff that we're going to talk about in the next two segments. Many who are even, many won't even hear it because they'll never take the time to listen. And even those who do hear it won't heed to it. It's just the way it is. It's human nature. We'll talk about that. And we're going to take a break. So you guys stay right there. We'll be back in a moment. Before I cut you loose, this topic here, women out there, or men, if you have resources that have helped you, especially that orient toward the women, to help them, to give them tools and resources from other women. Remember, the older women are supposed to mentor and teach the younger women? Okay, so if you've got some wise women in your life that are self-reliant. They got a good, solid, well-grounded, balanced approach to this self-reliance and the times that we're living in. Without being in fear and all this, you got those resources, send them in. We'll put something together to be a good resource. We got some ladies out there that would be willing to put a team together specifically for this topic to help address this. Maybe put some articles out there. So let me know. John Jacob at RadioFreeRedoubt.com, the voice of the American Redoubt.
Hi. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. For years, we've specialized in locating and securing the best survivalist retreats in the most sustainable area America has to offer. The clean and abundant fresh water found in North Idaho's springs, creeks, lakes, and rivers are the primary reason folks come here, as nothing is more important than water. Excellent seasons, rich soils, and clean Rocky Mountain air make for an ideal growing environment with no threat of tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, or forest fires. The best part of North Idaho is her people, friendly conservatives with beliefs deeply rooted in the Constitution and a sense of community. I want to invite you and your family to join us here to secure a peaceful future in a place that will sidestep much of the chaos that we all know is coming. Call me today at 208-667-1776 or visit me online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us. revrealty.us. And may God bless you.
As water continues to become more highly regulated, will you have the legal right to use the water on your own property? When the grocery store shelves are empty, will you have sufficient quantities of food being produced on your property to sustain your family year after year? Strategic Landscape Design offers design and consulting services that can make the answers to these life-sustaining questions a resounding yes. They offer water rights permitting assistance for resources such as creeks, ponds, irrigation, and hydroelectric power. Plus, permaculture design for perennial gardens and energy-efficient greenhouses to produce enough food to feed your family all year long. Strategic Landscape Design is a Patriot-owned business located in the heart of the American Redoubt. Go to www.strategiclandscapedesign.com to learn more.
One podcast dares to be different.
All right, thank you for being with us here at for segment three at Radio Free Redoubt. Segment three is brought to you by Katie Armor, C-A-T-I, for Come and Take It Armor. KatieArmor.com has the soft armor. They've got the steel plates, level 3A. And if you haven't watched the YouTube videos, just go to YouTube and type in Katie Armor Test. Amazing what that armor will stop. They've got free shipping included on their purchases. And their current production lead time is still less than a week. So check them out. KatieArmor.com, Patriot-owned business right here in the American Redoubt. Now, let's get to our main topic. I just loosely titled it. I haven't formalized it yet, but I just titled it When the Agent Comes Knocking, Interaction and Contact Federal Agents or Any Law Enforcement Agency When You Have Done Nothing Wrong. Okay, what's happened recently is, well, there's several cases. Just give me one example in particular. When several folks went down to the Malheur Refuge to meet with the people that were occupying it to find out more about the issues and what the BLM's doing and what these guys were hoping to accomplish and pray with them for a peaceful resolution and even worked sometimes some of them with the FBI and the people at the refuge back and forth as like intermediaries to make sure this didn't turn into another Waco, to make sure that this was peacefully resolved and that these legitimate grievances were addressed by the federal government, even if they agreed or disagreed with how they took over the refuge or that they did at all, was irrelevant. What was relevant to them is that there was a legitimate grievance here that's led these people to feel like there was no other recourse. The federal government obviously had overreached in several places. So these people went down to, I know several of them, who went to the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. And this is, first mistake, they had a sign-in guest registry where anybody coming to visit was encouraged to sign in as a guest. Well, this is created once it was obviously recovered by the FBI and they're going down the list and they are knocking on people's doors. they're building a case to help prosecute other people, American citizens. And this has got some folks rattled, obviously, as it would. We're going to talk about that. It's usually asking about a guy. Of course, there's several women also that went down. But the typical scenario is the guy's off at work. The wife gets a knock on the door and she answers the door and there we are. And there's guys holding FBI badges and she's shaken up and not, you know, concerned and not sure what to do. And first and foremost, I've talked about this many times. We need to reiterate it. OPSEC. Okay. Operation Security. PERSEC. Personnel Information Security. Personal Information Security. Social media. Clean it up. We're as patriots or citizens, not just patriots, any citizen, whether you're in the Occupy movement or whatever. The citizens, and I'm really focusing this toward the patriots, you're giving them nearly everything there is to know about you. And they can leverage that, and they will. They, you know nothing about them. You know nothing about these two guys that are standing on your front door. So most importantly, when an FBI agent makes contact, you are immediately at a disadvantage, and they have the initiative. You do not know their intentions or their objectives when they make contact with you or someone in your sphere of influence. You do not know their intent. You do not know what they already know or how much they know. They have the initiative and you do not. You take the initiative by fully preparing yourself mentally for the encounter. Rehearse it in your mind. They have the advantage of having previously done their research and homework, at least at a cursory level. They've had time to develop a strategy for an approach. It's called an approach. And likely, and that doesn't mean like, should we walk up the driveway or should we walk across the lawn? That's not the type of approach I'm talking about. An approach is their strategy or the tactics of how they want to set up the line of questioning, who they want to make contact with, what they already know about you. So they have a baseline of known information that they can gauge and judge your responses to for, you know, your, how honest or how cooperative you're going to be, things like this. So this is, they form their approach. So they already know a series of questions that they want to ask, who they want to ask, how they want to ask it, and the demeanor that they will present based on their assessment of you, your likelihood for cooperation or your non-cooperation, and likely a line of questioning, and they'll review it any number of times beforehand. They'll rehearse it oftentimes also. They've been able to rehearse in their minds, not just questions, but may even anticipate some of your responses and have rehearsed and reviewed potential follow-up questions for you based on their anticipated responses. So all of this would put a great deal of stress on you while they're able to remain calm, which is even more unnerving to you. And this can sometimes cause one to melt down in your mind. There's a book that I've mentioned before. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's called On Combat. This is by Colonel Dave Grossman. If you've never exposed yourself to any of his work, I strongly recommend it. Folks that I've worked with in the past, teams that I've worked on, it was mandatory. On Combat deals with the psychology and the physiology of being in combat, but also any stressful, high stress environment. It's a psychological study about, you know, warfare and high stress situations. So law enforcement and just the whole warrior class, soldiers and even paramedics and emergency medical responders and people like that, where you're dealing with a super fast moving situation, quickly developing, you're making, you know, your OODA loop is like going a mile a minute, trying to process this information, this raw intelligence, turn it into actionable intelligence and take appropriate action for the situation. But he covers something, Colonel Dave Grossman. He also does the Bulletproof Mind seminar series. Those are awesome. And so you've got On Killing, which is his first thesis that he did, on the psychology of killing and training to do that in time of war for our military and law enforcement and society. He was talking about video games and the impact that it's had on youth. The uninstitutionalized members of our society getting effectively combat simulation training without the restraints of a, you know, institutionalized discipline. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. So the bulletproof mind was just incredible series. If you guys ever get a chance to go take one of his seminars, they're great. And his book On Combat talks about, in a stressful situation, you will react in one of two ways. You will either respond using instinct or you will revert to training. Those are the two things that are going to happen when you're presented with a very highly stressful situation. Either instinct or you will revert to training. If you do not have training, you will be acting completely instinctively, just like an animal, literally. Your frontal lobe, your cognitive reasoning part of your brain that the animals don't use, is inhibited. And a cocktail of chemicals are dumped from various glands in your body. Your pupils dilate, your breathing becomes shallow or labored, and your fine motor skills deteriorate. Right, and your frontal lobe of your brain just like shuts down. That's the cognitive reasoning, human side of you that uses logic and reasoning and this kind of stuff. Okay, so you're basically acting like an animal at that point. Now, instinctively, an animal, for example, would enter a snare, put his head through the noose in a snare, which tightens slightly around his neck. Now, the animal's instinct is to pull to get away. As the noose tightens, the animal reasons that he doesn't reason. He's instinctively in his mind is telling him that it's not pulling hard enough to break free. So it pulls harder and the noose tightens even more. Right? Now, if the animal was trained, it would stop and do the exact opposite of what it instinctively wants to do. Its training would kick in, and if the animal pushes forward slightly, the noose would actually inherently go slack, possibly even enough that it could duck its head and allow the snare to just fall off onto the ground. So the first thing to do is to train yourself so that you're trained. How many times have you heard people say, man, this is whatever. It could be a firefight. It could be a train wreck that EMTs are responding to, screaming and panic and whatever. You hear him say, it was weird because my training just kicked in and it was like I was doing stuff without even consciously thinking of it. That's right. You were doing things you were trained to do. When you go into that hyper psychotic mode, responding to a high stress disaster type situation or combat, anything like that, your training will kick in and you will not even remember some of the stuff that you did. All right. Otherwise, well, you won't remember it anyway, even if you do it instinctively. Anyway, I'm getting off track here. So train yourself not to panic, which is panicking is instinctive. You can become confident through your training so that you don't need to panic or be unnecessarily nervous. You will be nervous if you're confronted by FBI agents or special agents of any sort or law enforcement flashing a badge. We want to ask you some questions, right? Especially during the initial moments of the contact. Just like public speaking, you'll be nervous for a few moments, but once your training kicks in, you'll find yourself increasingly gaining confidence during and throughout an encounter with, let's say for this example, a federal agent, should they come visit you. And so that confidence is good, and it can be bad. I'll talk about that in a minute or in a few minutes. So, now, why am I doing this? Why am I touching on this topic? Because in our American system, we have a beautifully and uniquely designed justice system and a constitution. I know it's being trampled on, but I'm talking about some very important American principles that you will need to lean strongly on in these type of encounter situations. In our system, you are innocent until you are proven guilty, not proven guilty by the agent standing there giving you his opinion, until you are proven guilty by a court of law, by a jury of your peers, if you choose a jury. That's your constitutional right. You need to assert that. You need to remind yourself of that. We need to remind ourselves of that. It may even embolden and encourage you when you remind them of that, and you may need to. The burden of proving your guilt is on the state. You do not need to prove your innocence. Now, third, you are innocent. If you are acting lawfully, you have nothing to worry about. Now, you may have broken a law and still acted lawfully. For example, if it's against the law to teach your children out of the Bible that there's only one God and his son is Jesus Christ who died for your sins, but you teach your child that anyway, even though it's illegal, what you have done may be illegal, but it is not unlawful. Because the law you broke is in fact a violation of the higher law. So in your mind, you must be convinced that you have done nothing wrong, that you have acted lawfully. You can't break a law which is in contradiction and violation of a higher law because that law is null and void. Now, can it be enforced? Yes, by a tyrant, but it is still an unlawful law, even though you've acted lawfully. Illegally, but lawfully. Does that make sense? These are the things we are faced with today as modern patriots. So the point is, if you feel guilty, if you're convinced that you're guilty and you're trying to figure out how to get out of it, it will show. If they're trying to establish your guilt and you're convinced you've done something wrong, it will show. And they will leverage that against you. That will give them a psychological edge and you will be at a psychological disadvantage. When you know you've done something wrong, you're trying to get out of it, they know that you know that you've done something wrong and they just got themselves an extra edge, right? You have to be convinced that you've done nothing wrong. You want the agent to feel in his heart, based simply on your body language and demeanor, that he's convinced he's got the wrong guy because you are so convincingly innocent. That comes from you truly being convinced yourself that you are innocent. If you believe that, you will project that. Now, I also do this because I see increasing efforts to marginalize, demonize, even criminalize God-fearing patriots by an administration which has no regard for our law of the land, the Constitution, nor the laws of nature and nature's God, and a system implementing policies, a doctrine, that is hostile toward those who understand the founders' intent for liberty and for the Constitution and our founding documents. In fact, this is an administration which has virtually declared war, or at least open rebellion, against God, which is the source of our liberty and our prosperity. The leftist, globalist, elitists, and government supremacists, which set themselves and their policies above the Creator and His law, and have, on multiple accounts, declared conservative, Christian, politically right-wing conservatives to be the enemy. They've made their intentions clear. They also have unlimited resources in the form of budgets and manpower with which to assert their anti-American agenda and their policies, even the unlawful ones. One of the machinations that they're leveraging is the justice system, and specifically the frontline troops of that machine, the agents of the FBI. Not all of them. It troubles me to say that. For many years, I have looked up to and admired the FBI as the pinnacle of professionalism and blind justice. I've worked with them. I've trained many of them. Of course, I'm talking about boots on the ground field agents. There's a couple of arrogant ones who thought much too highly of themselves, but for the most part, very professional and patriotic. Typical, by the book, Boy Scouts. And that takes some getting used to. Now, in the special operations community, by the book means great guidance, but it might not be comprehensive enough to meet the mission requirements. So the book is going by the book. That's a great suggestion and useful and applicable, but highly modifiable. The FBI, not so much. If it's not in the book, you don't do it. If it's in the book, you must do it. Now, the events at Ruby Ridge and then Waco tainted that image for me. But I chalked those up as a fluke in my naivety. More recently was the shooting of Lavoie Finicum in Oregon. Now, during the refuge occupation, in my opinion, the FBI handled itself with the utmost professionalism and restraint. But on the day Lavoie was shot, things changed. The FBI tactical team fired on Lavoie Finicum as he exited the truck with his hands up and with no firearm visible. That is, at the very least, aggravated assault, a felony. On top of that, they covered up the fact the FBI agents fired on Lavoie. In fact, they conspired together and lied about it. That's not the FBI I know, or I thought I knew. Now, there's an investigation into it that we can't get the facts about because it's an active investigation. And so this lack of transparency has contributed to my loss, and that of many others, in confidence in the once ultra-professional agency. Let me make a side note here. You have the inherent right to self-defense. If you are being shot at while in a surrender posture with your hands in the air and presenting no firearm or other lethal threat, who could argue that you would not have the right to defend your life? Could one not reasonably argue that he was in fear of his life when being unlawfully faced with lethal force? He was likely going for his gun. Yes! If my hands are in the air in a surrender posture and I'm presenting no threat and someone starts shooting at me, my gun's coming out. Does that not make sense? Now, before I go on, let me remind you that there are many FBI agents who are also God-fearing patriots. There are FBI agents in this listening audience, along with members of every branch of our government and the military. And God bless you guys. I'm not talking about the anti-patriots who are taking notes and hoping to do us harm one day, you weasels. You're out there too. And hopefully one day you'll realize we're not the bad guys. And some of you, a few of you, just have so much evil in your hearts that it doesn't matter what we say. You'll blindly or gladly follow orders to kill Christian patriots when the time comes. But that's a personal issue with you, and you'll stand in judgment for that one day. But there are patriots among the ranks. But the patriots in the ranks are the minority, aren't you? You're like, yeah, no kidding. Think about your office. You're like the token patriot, right? The butt of all the patriot militia jokes or whatever, just because you're a patriot or you've got a Gaston flag sticker on back of your car or something like that out in the parking lot. Well, so they stay low profile, as they should. The system will one day hunt down the patriots among the ranks. So Godspeed to you guys. Keep the faith and stay strong. Now, let's talk about the FBI agents in particular, because that's who's most likely going to be knocking on your door. They're the foot soldiers of this leftist regime, as we saw with Hillary Clinton circus. Well, not because most of them, the guys that are going to knock on your door, they're the foot soldiers, but it's not because they're evil, but because that's their job. They do their job every day. And like any job, there are times when it becomes drab and mundane. And truth be told, many agents are disgusted with what the agency's turned into. They're embarrassed and they're angry about the top brass and the policies coming down the pipe. Many of them were disgusted at the agency's recommendation not to prosecute Hillary. They all know she's guilty of criminal activity as the day is long. They're disgusted that this administration is ignoring the Islamic threat and the refusal by this administration to vet refugees. And in fact, piping Muslims in as fast as they can. Like most agencies, there are three primary groups of agents, even in the military. And contractors and all like. There's the Patriots, which is the smallest group. There's the Fedcoats. They love the power that they have and they'll gladly take you down. In fact, they enjoy it. And then there's the worker bees. This is the largest group. They don't have an opinion either way, or they keep it to themselves. It's just their job. If they do have an opinion, they stuff it because, well, it doesn't matter anyway. This is just their job. They enjoy their job, but you know, they're not on a campaign to ruin innocent people. They just want to get the bad guys because that's what the FBI does. Well, that's great if a loved one gets kidnapped. They're going to go to the ends of the earth and use every resource to solve the crime and bring the perpetrators to justice. Now, unfortunately, when they're briefed that preppers or homeschoolers or militia members or those who fly the Gadsden flag or what have you are the bad guys, unfortunately, many don't question it. If they get a directive to infiltrate a local militia to see if someone's making pipe bombs, they shrug and go do it. Most of the time, there's nothing going on. And then they get a little creative sometimes, wondering, what if? And then they make a pipe bomb and hand it to a militia guy or provide all the components to an unwitting gung-ho militia guy who they arrest as soon as he puts his hands on it. And voila, they got the bad guy. Now, the average FBI agent's not emotionally involved in your case, which is a good thing. You don't want them to be, especially if they're not a patriot. They don't have an axe to grind with you. This is not a personal matter to them. It's like investigating leads on any other federal crime. When they make a contact with you or someone in your household or a friend or acquaintance of yours, it's not a routine encounter for you, but it is for them. Can you picture a big yawn? All right. So keep that in mind. Don't get so spun up. They get an assignment from the field office to find out what they can about somebody involved in the Patriot community because they're told by their contracted subject matter expert watchdog groups hired to come in and talk to them about the biggest national security threat we face, which is right-wing extremists, you know, Southern Poverty Law Center. But see, this isn't a personal vendetta on the part of the field agent. This is policy driven down from the top, and they follow it because that's just what you do when you wake up and you go to work every day. So why would they come and talk to you? Well, let's take the Malheur Wildlife Refuge as a case example. Someone goes to the refuge to see if they can talk to patriots there about getting out without anyone getting killed. They may pray with them. They may try to act as an intermediary between local authorities or the FBI and those who are occupying the refuge to try to find a peaceful resolution. Many people came and went during the occupation. Many were pastors, grassroots leaders, independent journalists, bloggers, elected officials, and so on. Now, in January, the situation came to an end with the death of Lavoy Finicum, the arrests of numerous occupiers, and the final surrender of the holdouts at the refuge several days later. Everyone who hadn't gone home yet finally goes home. Now, what happened in Oregon is something that no tyrant can allow to continue. It was a direct challenge to the federal government's usurped power, as well as a black eye that they received after backing down to the Bundy Ranch and the Sugar Pine Mine in Oregon, or the defiant ATV ride by the citizens and elected officials in the Southwest desert in an area that the BLM deemed a no-human zone, essentially. And finally, the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupation. Now, you have to know, now, although I'm not privy to the closed-door discussions that took place in the administration, that the conversations essentially centered around dropping the hammer on the momentum that the Patriots had achieved. The Patriots were emboldened by the victory at Bundy Ranch and the subsequent actions that they took, effectively backing the federal government down. Now, top-down policies and efforts have one single aim: crush the resistance, take the wind out of their sails, demoralize them, strike fear into them, harm them financially, take their will to resist out of them, and crush the resistance before it gains any more momentum. Ending the occupation at the refuge wasn't enough. They just put out the brush fire when that happened. Now, they're using their foot soldiers, mostly FBI agents, to run around stomping out the embers so this brush fire doesn't come back again. So now they're knocking on doors. And the simple act of knocking on someone's door and making contact says, we know who you are and we're interested in you. And that's enough to take the fight out of most patriots. It has a chilling effect, and they know this. The brass knows this, the policymakers. But they're in the process, and I've talked about this before many times, of what is termed mapping the human terrain and also packing the file, packing the dossier, or packing the record, collecting as much information as possible and getting into the fusion centers. They want to know who's who and who's connected to whom. They're connecting dots. Not necessarily for today or even tomorrow, but for 6 months from now or a year or 2 years. If you have even an elementary knowledge and understanding of history, you must know that not in this administration, but this system is preparing for a showdown with conservative Christian patriot Americans. The patriots are the stumbling block to the globalists. Whether you're in a militia, or you're a homeschooler or a pastor who's cast off the 501c3 status to freely preach the offensive truth, The powers that be, this system, is making the case that you are the adversary and you are the adversary to them. You should be adversarial toward a godless, globalist, anti-American, caustic system that has not only vowed, but is actually executing its plan to destroy our country and our heritage, and especially to remove the presence of God from our culture, our institutional halls, and the minds of our children. Just like the prophets who spoke out against the kings, the tyrants, and the corrupt religious leaders who were leading the people toward the destruction of Israel, they called the tyrants out, didn't they? And sometimes they killed the prophets for it, because they didn't want a stumbling block challenging them and their destructive agenda. Nothing's new under the sun. Just lock that one into your brain. Remember it. In America and elsewhere, there must be a confrontation at some point. It's inevitable. Either they stop their agenda and leave us alone, not likely to happen, or we fully submit to their system and comply and compromise our values and our faith, which cannot happen, or there must be a showdown. There's only three ways this can go, what's happening to our nation. So let's get back to mapping the human terrain and the two primary objectives as I see it. We're going to talk about why an agent would come knocking either on your door or someone in your sphere of influence, a family member, a friend, or associate. And two things, messaging and signaling. That's the first reason, messaging and signaling. The second reason is intelligence gathering or case building. So messaging, signaling, and intelligence gathering, their motives, when we come back at the Voice of the American Readout. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Child Protective Services has a long and sordid history. They kidnapped a family's children because they home-birthed their twins. Shortly after the birth, paramedics showed up at the family home and recommended the children go to a hospital for evaluation. The family politely declined, and lo and behold, CPS showed up the next day. In a very rare move, the Attorney General's office then took over the case. This is the same AG who is persecuting Christian business owners for refusing to participate in same-sex wedding ceremonies. The fact someone is a Christian, home births, breastfeeds, and homeschools their children is not evidence of abuse. It's evidence of love. CPS is out of control, but thank God a courageous commissioner ruled against CPS and these children are going home for Christmas. But let us resolve to never let this happen again. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Community Like Matt Shea Republic.
This is segment four, brought to you by Works Holsters, WERKZ.com, for your custom-made holsters made right here in the American Readout. Yet another Patriot-owned company who strategically relocated, took the gap, and moved their business to the American Readout for all the right reasons. And they have a lifetime guarantee on all their products. Check them out, and don't forget to use the coupon code RFR today. Now, let's continue on with this little segment that I'm doing here. I might make this a two-part series, but I don't know. I might be able to get this wrapped up in this show tonight. There's two reasons why agents are knocking on patriots' doors right now, and the first reason is messaging and signaling, and the second one is intelligence gathering, also known as case building. So, messaging. Let's take that one down first. In messaging, they are signaling to the patriot, you are on our radar. We've noticed you. There's a target on you. Again, this has a chilling effect designed to subdue you, to take the fight out of you. It's frightening. It works. simply by entering your life, either directly or through someone else in your life that they know will come to you, shaken and concerned, to relay the encounter to you. This is even more unnerving for the individual that the agents were inquiring about than if they had contacted that person of interest directly. There's no closure. You'll think of tons of questions you wished your friend or family member would have asked but didn't. So you want to tell your family members, friends in your circle, get as much information as you can. And if in this type of a situation, you get as much information from the person about the encounter and then let it go. Now, you know the history books you've read and the stories of people that have been approached by the NKVD in Russia or the KGB once the Soviet Union fully matured, or the Stasi in East Germany, or the SS, the Gestapo in Germany, Poland, France, Belgium during World War II, Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge. Well, you get that knock on your door by Agent so-and-so, and now all of these people's in the past, their stories from history just came to life for you. There's nothing new under the sun. That heart jump up in your throat? Okay, others have been there before you many times. So you get the knock on the door. There's two guys standing there in 5'11", some pressed polo shirts, clean shaven, displaying badges saying to you, "Good evening, ma'am. I'm FBI Special Agent Black. This is Special Agent White. And we're wondering if you might be willing to answer a few questions." All right, this is where your mouth goes dry, your heart rate increases. You can feel your pulse pounding in the veins in your neck. Now what? So, now the stories you've read in your history books about agents knocking on the door, inquiring about you or a loved one, those just got real, real to you, like I just said. Keep in mind, this is not the first time, and it won't be the last time in history. It's just the first time for you. Okay, so they want to send a message. You're on our radar. Now, the number two purpose or objective is intelligence gathering or building a case. Why? Well, in the context of this discussion, they're trying to get a deeper understanding of the size and scope of the Patriot movement and who the players are beyond the scope of what's on social media. That's all been harvested and continues to be analyzed. Guarantee it. But they also know there's a significant number of players who have a solid understanding of OPSEC and PERSEC. That's operation security and personal information security. In other words, they conduct themselves properly, or they attempt to. So all the stuff that they're harvesting off of social media, which is a lot, way too much, is really just the tip of an iceberg, a much bigger iceberg under the surface. Now, OPSEC and PERSEC are measures taken to deny the adversary information about your actions, your personnel, your plans, your movement and intentions, and your organization. In other words, keep the other guys in the dark. They're gathering intelligence for a better understanding about the Patriot movement, in our case. Now, they've got a good grip on the social media and OSINT, open source intelligence side of things. Now they want to branch out and find out what they don't know, filling in the blanks, looking under the surface to see just how big this iceberg is. And besides intelligence, they're building a case or gathering evidence to help prosecute patriots they already have in custody or who they plan to take into custody at some point in the future. So they pound the streets and they knock on doors. That's what they're doing right now. They're looking for useful information about who the leaders are, who the significant players are, the size and the scope of the more hidden networks and what their intentions are. So that brings the FBI agent to the door, to your door, or someone you know. Perhaps you sign that cute little guest registry at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. Or you post it on social media that you're headed to the refuge and you're going to stand against the tyrants. But that's all they have on you. So you could get the visit. Don't be surprised by it. Be prepared for it. It's not unlawful for a government agent to approach you to ask you questions so he can better understand the situation. So long as he doesn't enter your home without a warrant or your property, a crossed gate marked no trespassing, as long as he doesn't seize or search you or your property or papers or effects without a warrant, any agent is perfectly within his right to walk up to you and ask if you're willing to answer some of his questions. And you are perfectly within your right to decline. It's your right, and they know that, even if they don't like it. So let's talk about the agent's approach, a strategy for how he plans and hopes to make contact to gain your cooperation. First of all, remember, this is not an interrogation, this encounter. Well, this is an interview. Now, in the technical sense, any questioning is an interrogation. A job interview is an interrogation. You're presented with a series of interrogative statements. That means a question. Interrogate. But in police science and in the investigative world, there's a subtle but distinct difference between an interview versus an interrogation. You're being confronted with an interview. Okay, an interview is non-accusatory. An interrogation is accusatory, or at least implied involvement or knowledge of the subject that they are investigating, usually a crime. So I'm going to touch briefly on resistance to interrogation, very briefly, but it's actually resisting the contact and the interview. But resisting interrogation is a totally different block of instruction. So in the recent wave of civilian patriot contacts by the FBI, all that is happening are interviews. There are multiple approaches, almost always. There are multiple approaches and questioning strategies. The most likely approach you will encounter for an interview is the friendly approach, or at the very least, professional approach. Now, the professional approach isn't about winning you over or pretending to be your friend. The emphasis is on getting information. It's like when a police officer is investigating a car accident. He's not coming up to you making small talk. Hey, buddy, how you doing today? And how's your son? My goodness, you're my boy's age. Good looking boy there. You play any sports? So, Joe, can I call you Joe? All right. A police officer investigating a traffic accident, he's going to say, afternoon, Mr. Smith, could you tell me which direction you were traveling? How fast do you think you were traveling? In your own words, describe what happened. And he's only concerned about the facts. He's not trying to win you over so you'll spill your guts, right? It's an interview, non-accusatory. So, sir, according to our information, you traveled to the Malheur Wildlife Refuge on or about the 10th of January. Can you tell me what the purpose of your visit was? Well, this is just straightforward. The most effective interrogation technique is direct questioning. No tricks, no circular logic, no tricked and loaded questions. I mean, it's just like, ask them a question. Amazing how many people just they'll answer the bloody question if you don't play games and tap dance around making your point and just ask them straight up. The direct question produces the most often accurate and timely information. Just get to the point. You went to the Malheur Refuge. Why did you go? Of course, there's actually some built-in we know all or file and dossier approach there because we already know something about you. You traveled to the Malheur Refuge. So in your mind, you're like, crap, they already know everything. So now I may as well spill my guts and show that I'm cooperating. All right. So anyway, that's a different thing. So that's pretty direct and forthright. It shouldn't take long to find out what their intent is. The most effective interrogation or questioning is called the direct questioning. Like I just said, they're just going to come and ask you a question. That's the most likely that you're going to encounter, at least at first, for two reasons. First of all, they're in the assessment phase. They're assessing your level of cooperation. They're also maybe trying to confirm information that they already have. All right. Are you going to deny being at the refuge when we've got your signature there signing in the guest book? They're assessing you at this point. Or as soon as you, I was there. Yeah, I signed that book. Then they just confirm that and then they can use that as a reliable source for future, investigation purposes. So you don't admit to anything. Because unless the person's resisting, it's the shortest distance between two points. It's a straight line to the information they need, asking a direct question. And third, it's unnerving to you. And it places the interviewer in a psychologically superior position. He's official and a figure of authority. So he puts you on edge and it gives him confidence, right? Now, in some cases, they'll try to catch you somewhere away from home, such as in the parking lot as you come out for work, or in a store parking lot. You have a psychological advantage being at your own home. They may want to approach you away from that to help establish dominance in the situation, especially if they've previously assessed that you're inclined toward non-cooperation. And if you're at home, you have a resistance built in, or a non-cooperation strategy built in. You could say, get off my property. It's harder to do that if they approach you in a store parking lot. Now, they may keep that in mind. Also, your home is where your guns are. And who knows, maybe a like-minded friend could be there visiting you. Now, they got two people to deal with that might not be happy with them being there. All right, so all this could place the agents at a disadvantage. So if they're actually pulling right up to your property in a casual business attire, walking up, knocking on the door, handing you a business card, all right, it's the highest probability that it is that in that particular visit is not about arresting you or anyone or even detaining you. They're conducting an investigation into something to which you or someone they believe you may know is somehow connected to this thing they're investigating. Now, conversely, approaching you at home or your wife while you're not at home could have the exact opposite effect, leaving you feeling unsafe and even violated. The fact that they came to your safe place, your home. Nothing says, I know where you live, like walking up to your house and knocking on your door. Now, the friendly approach is where they attempt to gain your trust and confidence. This is what you're very likely to encounter. Now, the guy might actually be a nice guy and he doesn't want to be a jerk to people in general. And it's just natural for him just to be, you know, cordial and friendly to you. It's not a secret trick that he's trying to suck you in. He's just maybe he really is a friendly, nice guy. Right? Or it could be part of the strategy. Once again, you're at a disadvantage. You don't know this guy. He knows you. Especially if you are really active on social media. So they're going to try to convince you, though, when they're putting that face on, that they're just like you. All right? They intend to do no harm to you, and that's what they're trying to convince you of. And it might be true, but the FBI is part of the Department of Justice, which means they're in the business of investigating for a purpose, to prosecute someone. If it's not you, then it's someone else. But there's a reason why they're standing on your front doorstep to talk to you. Now, this is where you need to use discernment and wisdom and sound judgment to determine if you should be talking to them. Always err on the side of not, if you're not sure. Look, if your neighbor's kid gets kidnapped, the FBI is going to get involved. They're probably going to visit you to inquire about what you may have seen. They may ask if you have home video security system they could take a look at. If that happens, I'm going to cooperate as much as I'm able. I want them to do their job and recover my neighbor's kidnapped child. But if a friend of mine went to Bundy Ranch and the FBI comes to ask about what I know of my friend's activities, who or where he went with, or what training he's been involved in, or what guns he's owned, or if my friend spoke of any guns he may have taken to the Bundy Ranch, I will not help them build a case to prosecute my friend, or any patriot, who, in my opinion, acted lawfully against an unlawful government action. What the Patriots did at Bundy Ranch is less than what the Patriots did at Concord and Lexington Green, events which, for the Patriots involved, we hold in high esteem. Don't worry about trick-and-loaded questions at this point. You won't be engaging them long enough, or in such a manner that those will even work, if you listen to what I'm telling you. In all cases, write this down, do not let them in your home. You step outside. Next, be polite and professional. Third, that doesn't mean you don't be firm. You can still be firm, but you can still be polite and professional. If they make small talk, try to joke, you keep it professional. Cross your arms and maintain a business-like demeanor. Crossing your arms also is a psychological barrier to them that you are guarded. And it creates a physical barrier you'll feel much more comfortable behind, especially if you find yourself being nervous. This will likely be a natural action that you'll do without even realizing it. Make up your mind that you or your friend or your loved one has done nothing unlawful and be prepared to insist on that without adding details and without proving your innocence. You don't offer evidence that you're innocent. they must produce evidence that you or another person they're actually interested in are guilty. Any evidence presented supporting your innocence will be done by your attorney if it comes to that. Okay? So, knock, knock, knock. Ma'am, I'm Special Agent Black and this is Special Agent White. Is your husband home? Now, stop right there. Grab your cell phone and begin recording before anything else is said. Tell them, wait a moment. Wait a moment while I prepare to record this conversation. They're probably recording it. So should you. Now, if they haven't volunteered their credentials, ask them for their credentials. Ask them for a card, a business card, and they will give it to you. And they will give you their cell phone number. It's a department-issued cell phone number for conducting business like this. They will have a business card with their information. Ask them, what is this about? Remember, be polite, be professional. And ask them several questions. Well, two questions. What is this about? And is he or am I being investigated for a crime? Now, some people are like, ask if you're being charged with a crime. No, no, no. Hold on. Ask if you're being investigated for a crime, not being charged with a crime. See, because if they say no, absolutely not, then they are likely trying to gain information about someone else and is hoping for your or your husband's assistance. If they say they're unsure about whether or not there's crime charges, anybody's being charged with a crime, and they're just trying to learn more about XXX, then he's likely the target of the investigation and possible prosecution. Okay, so if they could be investigating you and suspecting you of a crime, but no charges have been brought yet, so they're not lying when they say, no, no, he's not being charged with a crime. He's not being charged with a crime because they're still investigating it, but in about 48 hours he's going to be charged with a crime. So right now they're investigating that person for a crime. Ask them, is this person or am I being investigated for a crime? I want to know that. I want that right out front. Okay. Anyway, then send them on their way. Tell them I decline to answer any questions at this time. Then if I'm not being investigated for a crime, you already told me what it's about. Now, the reason why I ask what's this about, because you might be prepared to go total jerk on this guy. Because you can stand for your rights. And really what happened is the guy down the street's son just got kidnapped 6 hours ago. And they're canvassing the whole neighborhood to see if anybody's seen anything. That's why it could be legitimate. Ask them, what is this about? And then once they say, well, this is about, your involvement or your husband's involvement in the, the wildlife refuge in Oregon. We just want to ask him a few questions. Okay, right there. Stop the whole thing right there. I do not feel compelled to answer any questions at this time. If we're not being investigated for a crime, then this conversation's over. Send them on their way. Do not answer any further questions. You're not obligated to. It will feel strange. It feels like you're using bad manners. It feels rude. But it doesn't matter. You have to listen to me when I'm telling you this. They are used to this. This is your first time, not theirs. They've been told, no, I don't want to talk to you about anything about that, or I don't want to answer any questions. They've been told that before. All right, just like salesmen, they've had the door shut in their face, and they go away, and they shrug, and they darn it, right? Well, hopefully the next person will be more talkative in their minds. That's what they're saying. They're there to talk about your husband, not you. Anything you say could be helpful to them. Do not talk to them about where your husband is, when he'll be back, who he's with, what activities he is or not involved in. Insist that they call in advance if they want to come to your home again. Tell them you have not given them permission in advance, and if you have not, they are not welcome on your property without a warrant. Put that in my packet. Now, immediately notify your husband. If you do not have the phone app Signal or the phone app Wickr, get one or both now. Wickr allows for encrypted texting and can be sent to set to burn the messages from minutes to hours or up to 5 or 6 days later. After that, even if they hack into your phone, the message is irretrievable. Now, Signal is an encrypted texting and phone call app. from the creators of Redfone. You can also attach and share pictures and files encrypted with each other. And tell your husband as much of the encounter as you can recall. Write down as many details as possible, as soon as possible, and then keep filling things in as things that you forgot to mention come to you. Next, get a hold of your pastor, your attorney, or a team of trusted mentors and counselors and advisors, and seek counsel from them. Pray about the situation and how to proceed. The next situation is something we're seeing a lot more of, and that's when the agents are identifying and approaching associates or acquaintances, friends, or ex-spouses to get information about someone. This occurs when they don't have anything necessarily incriminating against a person or a group, but through modeling and statistical probability, they believe the person or the group's a likely candidate for potentially being involved in so-called illegal activity. And of course, what might be illegal in their minds could be something that's lawful, like in a state where it's illegal to own an AR-15. That's clearly an unlawful law. But anyway, the point is that they skirt the edges of your sphere of influence to gain information from someone who may have been on the inside of your circle at some point. This is especially effective for them if they can identify someone who may hold a grudge against you. Now, maybe a militia recently experienced a split. There could be some animosity that could be exploited by an agent befriending someone in the other group. Now, you're not together. You may not feel as bound to previous loyalties. Maybe this is someone's chance to get back at the group that they were ousted from. Maybe this is a chance for an ex-spouse to get even or just to be vindictive. So she might be all too happy to divulge some discussion that you and a buddy had about building silencers 3 years ago, even though the conversation never materialized into any type of action. Or maybe you never had any such conversation, but the information's fabricated to do you harm. Now, in this day and age, hopefully you're getting a really good lesson in something that many of us have been driving home or attempting to for years: OPSEC and compartmentalization, also known as need to know. More and more patriots are getting I'm not afraid syndrome out of their systems, and they're cleaning up their crap from social media, and they're now understanding that blabbing their mouth at the gun show and elsewhere maybe wasn't such a good idea. You didn't care because the AR-15s you own are perfectly legal. Well, maybe they're legal today, but what about tomorrow? How about your night vision, your gas mask, your body armor? That's all legal today, but one day in the future, it will be banned. And once you post all your crap on Facebook or anywhere else on the internet, it's there forever. Even when you think you deleted it, it's all archived. And who do you think has access to all that? That's right, fusion centers. Hence, the FBI. On that note, fusion centers. There's a term you need to understand. The term is called packing the record. Law enforcement at the local, county, state, and federal level are encouraged to glean as much information as possible from their interactions with the general public and feed that information into what amounts to retrievable databases at fusion centers, wholesale information collection centers designed for all levels and branches of government, especially law enforcement and investigative intelligence components of the government, to share information with each other. So that means when you walk up to that person, say, I'd like to ask you a few questions, and they say, my husband's not here and I don't want to answer any questions. Great. They're going to make a note of the tattoos. They're going to make a note of the license plates that were there. They're going to make a note of who was home. They're going to confirm that the address is good, that you still live there. They're going to make a note of that big old mastiff that you got around the corner there, baring his teeth. They're going to make note of the video camera that you've got, your surveillance camera that you got outside your home pointed at the front door that they were standing in front of. They're going to be noting is what's called packing the file, packing the folder, packing the record. Okay, everything there is to do. Anytime they make contacts, get as much information as absolutely possible and feed that into this retrievable database at fusion centers. This is in a godly system that's being built right now. Stasi blows the Stasi away. You think the Germans were efficient? They dreamt of having this type of system that's being built right now. I digress. My point is, sanitize, sanitize, sanitize. If you had poor OPSEC before, stop now and change it. If you were ignorant, now you're not. So don't keep violating OPSEC now just because you already blew it back then. So what's the point? You need to train up everyone in your circle as quickly as possible. You won't reach everyone, but you can minimize the risk. And you don't want to be that guy who unwittingly helps prosecute some patriot just because he showed up at the Malheur Refuge to pray with some patriots or bring him a hot meal and happened to have a gun on his hip while they were there and they got that information from you. Now, if agents approach you to inquire about another person or a group, simply state that you cannot help them. Take their cards and their names and then notify the party being inquired about. You do not answer questions about someone else. State that. I'm sorry, but I don't feel it's appropriate for me to discuss someone else. You would have to ask them those questions. You don't help them in packing the record. First, it's not your place. Secondly, you would hope that someone else would do that for you, and they should. Insist that the party in question is honorable, respects the law, and would never be involved in unlawful activity. Do not provide any details to make your point. Like this one time when my friend was asked by someone to build a silencer, and he told them no. Okay, you don't have to prove their innocence. All right? You shouldn't even be talking about them with other people that you don't know. Now, if they persist, you stay firm to that. You keep holding on to that you will not talk about someone else. I don't know. If you're asked about the party in questions, affiliations, or activities, the response is, I don't feel like that's appropriate to talk about somebody else, especially since I know he or she is an honorable, upstanding citizen. Beyond that, I can't help you. If they ask about the person's or party's activities and affiliations, I'm not aware of anything like that. All I can tell you is that they're honorable people who have always demonstrated moral character and have never advocated unlawfulness. Other than that, I don't feel it is appropriate for me to be talking about them. You need to talk to them yourself. Politely thank them for their understanding and wish them farewell. Then take notes immediately afterward if you didn't get a chance to record it, which you should have, and document everything, time, date, names, location, every question and every one of your responses. Then contact that party, preferably encrypted, and let them know right away just what just occurred. Give them all the information you have about the encounter so he can begin seeking counsel. Now, if you are directly contacted by agents, immediately begin recording. Be professional and courteous, businesslike. Ask them to wait before proceeding so you may begin recording so you can refresh your memory of the discussion afterward if necessary. Ask them for their cards and their credentials. Ensure that their name is on the cards. If not, ask them for their names and proper spelling. Ask which office they are from if it's not already on the card. Ask them what the nature is of their business. Ask them if you are being investigated for a crime. Remember, simply asking them if you're being charged with a crime allows them to more easily mislead you. They may not have actually pressed charges yet. They're still building the case. They will almost certainly tell you absolutely not. Are they charging you with a crime? That's what, even if they are, that's what they're going to tell you. They do not have to be truthful with you. But that would be accurate because the FBI doesn't charge you with a crime. The federal prosecutor is the one who charges you with a crime. So they wouldn't be lying. Oh, we're not charging you with a crime. Duh. It's the prosecutor that does that. Now, if they sidestep the question of whether you're being investigated for a crime, it will probably go something along the lines of, well, we just have a couple of questions, so we have accurate information. If they don't directly answer those questions. But they may not come right out and tell you if they're investigating you for a crime. All right. You need to end the conversation right there. It's obviously beneficial for you to gain as much information about their intent as possible. This is helpful to you, but you have to be extremely cautious because you're engaged with them then. Normally, the more you engage, the more you could help their case. Since you're in a reactionary position and they have the initiative, they are initiating the contact on their timing, terms, and location of choice. They have the advantage. You have two options. The first one being the least risky to you. The second potentially being the most advantageous, but a higher risk for you. So if you don't have the aptitude for this, always go with, I don't feel like talking to you. Thank you. Have a nice day and close the door. Okay. The first option is simply to state that if I'm not being charged or investigated for a crime, I wish not to be interviewed. Thank you. Have a nice day, gentlemen. And then ask them to leave your property. You do not have to talk to them. But then your mind is racing because there are so many unanswered questions, and that will take a toll on you. So the second option is for you to take back the initiative by going on the offensive without being offensive. You've established that you're not being charged with a crime. You've established that with them. They may even say you're not being investigated for a crime. They may actually be inquiring about someone else. And I just covered that previously. If they say you are being investigated for possible involvement in a crime, then you immediately tell them you cannot speak to them without seeking counsel and bid them a nice day. Tell them they should be expecting a phone call from your attorney to clear this up because you have broken no laws. You are an honorable, upstanding citizen who has done nothing unlawful. They do not have to read you your Miranda rights just because they've not taken you into custody and may not have you detained. Just asking you a few questions. What most people don't stop to think about is that you have the right to remain silent even when you're not under arrest. It's amazing how many people sing like a canary, standing there talking to a couple friendly agents, essentially incriminating themselves because absolutely not are you being charged with any crimes. And then once the citizen's in handcuffs, then they say they don't want to say anything that would incriminate themselves. Of course, they should have stuck that about 30 minutes ago. And there's patriots out there who are listening to this right now who will not listen. You'll do your own thing. You'll end up being charged with, Lord only, who knows what things will be illegal one day. I know not everyone will heed this advice. But if we can at least minimize the number saying something that they shouldn't, then that's all I can hope for. But I know that I know personally, two patriots that are in prison right now who have heard this stuff before. They didn't apply it. Now they're fighting for their freedom from behind bars. But being informed patriots that you are, you don't need someone to remind you of your rights. You know that every word coming out of your mouth could be useful in their case to prosecute you or someone else, whether or not you're arrested. You've removed the burden of proof from them by handing evidence to them on a silver platter. Don't do that. You know you have the Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate yourself. You know that authorities must have a warrant to search you or your property. Do not explain anything to prove that you're innocent. It's not your place to prove your innocence. It's their place to prove your guilt. Now, continuing on with the second option, you going on the offensive, you could begin asking them questions. Now, remember earlier when I said, if you have some training in advance, you won't be so nervous, which is a good thing because it can help you have confidence dealing with this encounter, but it can be a bad thing too. Well, this is why. You become so comfortable that you forget your tongue and you start turning into a chatty Cathy. And they're recording everything, just letting you ramble on and on. And of course, there are some people who ramble on and on and can't stop talking because that's what they do when they're nervous. If you know this about yourself, when you're nervous, you talk a lot and talk fast. If you know this about yourself, and this is you, you already know this about yourself. Be aware of it and force yourself to control your mouth. Just zip it. But back to going on the offensive. If you have the presence of mind, you ask them questions. Remember, as much information as you can relay or convey to others in the Patriot community and the leadership, including your pastor, county commissioner, friendly sheriff, state representative, etc., the better for them and for you. So ask them, what made you think I would be valuable? I would be valuable to you in this investigation? Ask them that. What made you think I would be valuable to you in this investigation? Next, how did my name come up in all of this? Next, you investigate crimes, obviously. What crimes are you investigating relating to this visit here? Next question, who do you think is involved in these crimes? Next question, who else in this area do you plan on speaking with? What made you interested in him or her? He's an honorable, upstanding citizen who upholds the law. Next, what's next in your investigation? Now, most of these questions will be met with resistance techniques of their own, and most likely the classic, well, this is an ongoing active investigation, so we can't really go into any of those details. All right, really? You can't? Well, then, can I have the number of your supervisor? Can I get his name? Could you spell it for me, please? Can I get his phone number, please? However, You're looking for that one talkative agent who didn't pay attention to his resistance to interrogation training, or didn't think of it because he's not in captivity either, so his mind didn't go into resistance mode. And even if they slip and answer one or two of those questions, you know more now than you did 30 minutes ago as to their intentions and their what their goals are, and you took back the initiative. Notice also, in that line of questioning, you were professional and polite, and none of it was about you. You gave up no information about you. You weren't talking about you. You were talking about them. You didn't provide any details about your affiliations, your activities, or your future intentions. And they may not answer, but they may. But if you never ask, you'll never know. And this line of questioning could be, should be, taught to everyone in your family and inner circle, especially if you're politically active and involved in the Patriot community or Patriot-related activities. And finally, just don't do anything blatantly illegal. Don't build pipe bombs. Don't rob banks to support your cause. Don't hold meetings to discuss arresting and kidnapping and harming agents or judges or elected officials, or don't put on classes on how to build silencers and short-barreled rifles. You don't need to be messing around with any of that stuff. Those things are clearly illegal, and we want to be law-abiding citizens. And especially, we should never be in conflict with the higher law, the Constitution and God's law. And we certainly have no duty to aid agents in the violations of the higher laws, even if they're acting so-called legally. Of course, people who are inclined toward that behavior don't listen to Radio Free Redoubt. They don't listen to anyone's level-headed wisdom or experience or advice, which is why those kinds of people prematurely go to prison. In this listening audience, maybe this doesn't apply to you, but maybe it applies to someone in your life that you know. You need to listen to this, Joe Schmo. You need to listen to this episode of Radio Free Redoubt. Now, I know I'm forgetting some key things, but this will definitely get you started. You do not have to talk to them. Politely decline to proceed with the interview. If I'm not being interviewed or investigated for a crime, I'm not being charged for a crime, then I do not wish to speak to you further. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a nice day. All right. I'd love to hear your feedback and input also, your thoughts in the listening audience. Then we can add to some of these things. I have plenty more I'm sure I could add to it if I sat down and thought about it more, but this is a good primer for you. Some of it will be great additional advice. Some of it won't be, but I look forward to seeing all your input. With that, you have a blessed, super blessed week. Some great training coming up with Amaron Corps this week, and I'll be in touch with you guys. I'll probably pre-record next Saturday's show on the American Christian Network. Anyway, stay safe, be blessed, and thank you guys all for being in the fight. And make sure that you do a lot of your fighting on your knees. All right? Okay, with that, this is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to The Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.